We'll have to make it worthwhile. Okay, here we go. So we are on Samach Gimel Amad Aleph, so 63A. We're at the very first wide line, the widest line, which says Tanya, Rebbe Omer. The very first word in the line is Rav Chisda. So it's Tanya, Rebbe Omer, right here. Tanya, Rebbe Omer. Okay. So the Gemara says, Braisa as follows. Rebbe Omer, Rebbe Yehuda Nasi said, La'olam al yarbe adam re'im. This is like counterintuitive. You shouldn't have too many friends, too many acquaintances, like almost like you have too big a social circle. Why? B'soch beis all in your house. Shenemar, because it says, Ish re'im lihis ro'ea. A man who has so many friends, so many acquaintances, it will end up being destined to quarrel. Like the classic, you know, at the Thanksgiving table, you got that uncle who's there, is talking politics all of a sudden with the rest of the family, becomes an issue. In other words, you have too many friends around, it could be that they'll start quarreling one to the other. So kind of keep a normal social network. Nowadays, sometimes that can get out of control, right, with social media. Okay, the verse continues. Tanya, Rebbe Omer, another statement in the name of Rebbe. Al-Yimna Adam Apotropos, so based on a person should not appoint a person who is in charge of the possessions and property of his house, the manager over his property, all of his possessions, his business dealings. Shilmali Lomine Potifar as Yosef Apotropos, right? The story by Yosef, okay, is that he was a slave for Potifar. Potifar saw he's a great slave, doing great. This guy's very capable. He put him in charge, it says, on the entire house. He put him in, Yosef in charge of everything. Well, what did that lead to? Well, the wife of Potiphar saw, wow, Yosef's quite a capable guy. He's doing all the business. He's in charge of everything. He's running the whole show. So she ends up developing feelings for the person who's in charge, not her husband, but this Apotropos. So what ends up happening is, so if Potiphar had not set up Yosef to be the one in charge really of everything of his house, well, lo ba lo, so Dover would not have come to that situation with Joseph found himself in where he was being seduced by the wife. So again, it's best to not have one person be in charge of everything in that type of a role, so that the husband is not really the Baal HaBayis, he's not the one in charge of the house, because it can lead again to promiscuity. Tanya, Rebbe Omer, another Bryce, Rebbe says, Lam nismicha parshas nazu parshas sota. So here is a famous smicha to parshas. Now, what this means is that in the Torah, we have various topics that are discussed. Let's say, so in other words, what we're going to discuss, what we're referring to here, is that the Torah, what goes ahead in Sefer Devarim, in Sefer Bamidbar, and in Bamidbar, it has a discussion of Sota. The Sota is the wife who is seems to be doing something inappropriate. She seems to be secluding herself with another man, and the husband is jealous and says, I don't want to see you secluded with this man anymore, again, in a private area. And she does, and she is witnessed to go into a private area with this man after being warned. So that's called the Parsha of Sota. She ends up having to go to the Beis HaMikdash. She's tested with the waters, where she has the scroll is written with this name of God. It's dissolved in the water. She drinks the water. If she was faithful to her husband, then she's blessed to have a child. If she was unfaithful to her husband and she really did something inappropriate to this other man, then it says right there, her stomach collapses, she ends up dying on the spot. Pretty dramatically so. So that's the Parsha Sota. What happens right afterwards is the very next discussion in the Torah is the Parsha of Nazir. So the very next Parsha of the Torah, it talks about a Nazir, the Nazirite, who says, I'm not going to drink wine, I'm not going to cut my hair, I'm not going to become Tami Lameis, I'm not going to become defiled to a dead body. Now, in the Torah, we also go ahead and we look for the lesson behind why is there a certain sequence behind different parts of the Torah. So here, the question is, what is the significance of the sequence starting with the parsha of the woman who's the wayward wife, going into the discussion of the Nazirite? Why is there that sequence? What is it teaching us? It just seems to be unrelated topics. So the Rebbe teaches us the following. So Rebbe Omer, Lam nismacha parshas nazir leparshas sota. Why is parsha of the Nazirite immediately follow the parsha of the wayward wife? Lamar lecha, if someone is present, someone happens to be witness to this woman who is in the Beis Mikdash and sees the whole scenario that's going on where she has to drink this water and be tested, he should go ahead and he should say right there and there, I'm taking an oath not to drink wine. Why? Because it is the wine which led, meaning a little bit overindulgence of wine, which can lead to impropriety, which can lead to situations where a wife might be attracted to another man, where the man can be attracted to another person's wife. We know that that can happen when people drink too much wine. So, of course, with the golden mean, jump to the other side. Go if you see a situation which was due to too much drinking, then take a break from drinking. Now, the question that's asked here is that this individual who is witnessing the sota is not the person who was involved in the episode. We're not talking about someone who was involved in the situation. He wasn't the one who the husband was jealous about. He's not even the husband. We're talking about a third party, some person who's just a witness to the whole event. He's standing on the sidelines. So the question is, why does he have to go ahead and take a vow not to drink wine? He was not involved in the situation whatsoever. We understand the husband, this other guy, the wife. Those people, they were directly involved in the situation which might have been caused by overindulgence of wine. Why this random person who just happens to witness? So there's two answers that, which I've heard, which I think are very insightful. One is that one says, basically, if Hashem puts you in a circumstance where you see something, a difficult situation, then perhaps it's a message to you that you might also be guilty or potentially overindulging, and therefore take it as a lesson to yourself. Even if you might not think it is, why were you chosen to witness this situation? You could have been somewhere else at that time, but you happen to be the one who was at this event. Take it as a lesson. Think about your own life and see maybe there's something I could be doing better, or I have to take extra precautionary steps in my own life. That's one answer. Another answer I heard, which is I heard many years ago, I think I heard this from Rav Meir Chomsky, that the idea is if a person witnesses something powerful, something very, a difficult situation between a husband and a wife, where she had to be tested with these waters, very, very profound, very emotional, you can imagine, dramatic situation, for a person to walk away and do nothing, to say, okay, guess what, come home to his wife and say, honey, guess what happened at work today? He was working in the Beis HaMikdash, and he saw this wife come, and she had to drink the water, whole dramatic situation, and not be emotionally impacted. To walk away and do absolutely nothing, to live life as though nothing occurred, nothing changed in life, that is something that is a catalyst, sort of like a type of lifestyle where you witness amazing events, whether they be inspiring events, or to be witness to dramatic events, or God forbid, life and death situations, and not to walk away and say, I'm impacted by that, I'm inspired by that, to go ahead and take on something new. That is the correct response. For a person to witness a sota b'til kula, to see that whole dramatic situation about sota, and then take upon himself a vow to be extra careful, extra scrupulous, because he internalized it. That's the right approach. Like anything else, if you witness a tremendous lecture and you're inspired by it, take something on. Think about how it can impact your life. Think of if you witness a person who does an amazing chesed, a tzedakah, to just see it and say, oh, by the way, I heard that someone donated so much money to this cause, and I'm so inspired by it, but to do nothing about it yourself, go ahead. Or if you witness a life and death situation, a life-altering, sometimes it's very tragic, and to walk away from that situation and not be impacted, not to think about your own life, how could I help that family? How could I do something that is a response to, your own life, to realize the how temporary life is? The point, of this Rebbe is teaching us is if you witness dramatic moments in life, don't let them just simply pass you by. Take the dramatic moment and use it as an opportunity to internalize it and be growing from it yourself. That's the message. Okay, let's continue. Amr Chizkiah. So we're now in the wide lines at the bottom of Samach Gimel Amud Aleph. We are 1, 2, 3, 4 lines down where it says Amr Chizkiah in the middle of the line. Amr Chizkiah Breder Parnach. Amr Yochan. Lamin is Mecha Parshas Sotu La Parshas Truma Maestros. Now we're going to do another Sikh Michas Parshas. What comes right before the whole discussion of Sota is a discussion of Trumos and Maestros. Trumos are the tithes that are given to the Kohen, to Levi, etc. Now, why is it that it talks about giving the tithes and then jumps right into the wayward wife discussion? Well, those things have nothing to do with each other. Lomar Lecha, it's to teach you the following lesson. Kol Sheish Lo Trumos or Maestros, Ze'ena Nosen Lo Kohen. Anyone who has Truma, Maaser, he has tithes, he's supposed to be giving to the Kohen, and he does not give it. He keeps it for himself. So if Nitzrach Lo Kohen, the person says to himself, I want nothing to do with the coin. I'm keeping the money for myself. In the end, he'll see he's going to need to go to the coin. He's going to need the coin for his help. How's that? Ayadei, ishto, through his wife. Meaning his wife's going to become a wayward wife. Hashem's going to see to it that this situation is going to happen. And what's he going to have to do? He's going to have to go to the Beis HaMikdash and seek out the coin to help him out, clarify the situation. Shenamar, what's the proof of the psukim? It says, the ish, es kadashav lo yu, a man who kadashav the holy things, it refers to the holy tithes they're supposed to give to the Kohen, the truma, the master, which have the kedusha to them. Lo yeh, if a person says, now the simple meaning of the verse is, lo yeh, that is owned by the person until he gives it to the Kohen. The Kohen can't just walk into the field and say, hey, this is mine, I'm taking it. It has to first be given to the Kohen, then it becomes the possession of the Kohen. That's a simple understanding, but we're taking a drasha, a higher level of interpretation, and that means that lo yeh, the person says, it's mine, it's my own, lo, it's his. He claims it to himself. In that case, the Samach Leh, it says right afterwards in the Parsha, Ish ki tishta ish ishto, a person, Ish ki tishta ish ishto, a person will have to give his wife to drink from the waters of Sota. He'll have to test his wife through this whole fight. And what does it say after that? V'chziv, v'hevi ha'ish es ishto, the rest of the pasuk says, el ha'kohen. He was trying to avoid the Kohen by not giving him the tithes. Meanwhile, Hashem will see to it. You cannot avoid the Kohen. You cannot avoid what you have to do. Hashem will see to it. You have to go to the Kohen and confront him in the Beis Hamikdash. V'lo odela, and not only that, sof shenitzrach lahen. In the end, the person himself, the one who's trying to keep all these tithes and not give them out for himself because he thinks he needs the money, he'll in the end need the money for himself, meaning he's going to need one of the tithes is the maaser ani, the poor, the 10% we give to the poor. In the end, he's going to need it for himself, meaning he's going to need to collect from the poor because he's going to become poor. Shenemar, v'ish es kadashav, lo yeh, a person who does not give away the holy things to the proper people, lo yeh, he's going to have to end up taking them for himself. He's going to have to need the tithes to be given to him because he's going to literally become poor. So let's continue. Amr of Nachman Bar Yitzchak, of Nachman Yitzchak said, v'im, natan, if he ends up giving the, if he gives all the trumas and maasers properly, he gives all the tithes. So from this asher, he's going to become rich. He's probably Hashem's going to see to it that he will become wealthy. Shenamar, ish asher yitin l'koin lo yihyeh. It says, if a person gives the thing, everything he's supposed to the koin and to the Levi and everyone else, he gives everything properly. Lo yihyeh, something will be for him. Well, remember, he gave everything away. What's coming to him? So the Gemara says, lo yihyeh mamon harbe. He's going to have much money. Hashem's going to see to it that he's going to prosper if he gives all the tithes, he gives all the proper trumos and masters away. Amr of Huna bar Brechia, Mishum Rabbi Elazar Kafar. So he has the following teaching. Kola Mishatef Shem Shemayim B'Tzaro. Anyone who goes ahead and links, who connects his own tsar, his own despair, difficult situation to Hashem, how so? Rashi explains it means one of two things. It either means he says when he hears of a person who died, who we might know, who he's close to, or even a family member, Chassid Rechmal Atzlan, he says, Baruch Dayan Hamas. Blessed is the God who is of judgment. You know, meaning he connects to the bad news, the name of Hashem, so that he connects to his sorrow, that Hashem is also sorry. Hashem also is kivyachol, as if he's also suffering. Similarly, Rashi says also, if a person is suffering, he has a challenging situation, he davens to Hashem and puts all of his difficult situation, and he relays it to Hashem so Hashem should know about it. Meaning, he's connecting to Hashem in difficult times. So in that case, the person does that, kofun lo parnasaso. The rewards for that is that they will double his parnasa, his wages, his salary, his livelihood. There we go, livelihood. Shinamar. It says in the pasuk, "Vayash Shakai." The word, the Shindal Yud here is the name of Hashem. We don't say it, so we're going to say Shakai, the same we don't normally pronounce Hashem's name. So, "Vayash Shakai b'tzarecha," Hashem will be in your suffering. V'chesef to'afos lach. So money will be to'afos to you. So, what is the translation of the word to'afos? So, Rashi explains that to'afos is the Aramaic translation for the word kefel, double. So that the money will be doubled to you if you connect Hashem to your suffering. Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani Amar, Parnasaso me'ofefes lo. What it means is that your parnaso from a different to'afos also can be from the root word la'uf, which means to fly, like a bird. So it means also to fly. So me'ofefes lo kitzipor, your livelihood will fly high like a bird. It's going to be very easy flying high. Shenamar v'chesef to'afos lach. As it says in the pasuk that if you connect Hashem to your sorrow, then in good times Hashem is going to make sure that your livelihood will fly easily. Let's continue. Amar of Tavi, Amar of Oshia. So Rav Tavi said in the name of Yoshia the following teaching: Hamar pe'atmo medivrei Torah. Anyone who weakens himself from learning a Torah, ein bo koach lamo diyom Torah. He will not have the strength to stand up in the time of despair, when his times are difficult, he won't have the proper, he won't have the strength, fortitude to get through those times. Shene'emar, because it says in the pasuk, Kisra Pisa, you went ahead and you weakened yourself. Biyom Tzara, in a day, therefore, since you weakened yourself of learning of Torah, Biyom Tzara, Tzar Kochacha, on the day of distress, your strength will be constricted, your strength will be limited. You will not have the necessary fortitude to get through the difficult times. So if you learn properly, Hashem is going to tell you, he will make sure that you have the strength to get through difficult times. Amr of Ami Bar Masna, Amr Shmuel, even it doesn't have to be learning Torah. Even the person who just simply weakens himself and not really he's careless about doing any particular mitzvah, not specifically learning, it will also apply to the same pasuk and the same issue. He'll have a weakened strength. Shenamar, Hisra Pisa, Nikoma Koma. It doesn't say that you weakened yourself in the pasuk specifically about Torah. It just says that you weakened yourself. Therefore, any mitzvah for which you were not careful about, regardless of whatever it is, then at the time when you have a difficult situation, again, Hashem's going to have see to it that you don't have the right fortitude, you don't have the right strength to get through the challenge. Okay, Amr,
to weaken oneself.
It means that you will be weak, not that you are going to. To weaken yourself means that you will not. Okay, let's say it this way. I saw a commentary. I think maybe in the footnotes there. That it doesn't mean that you stop learning. It means that when you learned, you didn't really pay attention. You kind of let it go. So in other words, when you learned, you didn't give it all of your attention, all of your strength. Okay. So that's what I mean by you weakened yourself. Because if you're really fully engaged, then that shows that all of your efforts, all of your energy is given attention to that learning or to that mitzvah. If a person goes ahead and he does, let's say, davening, and he's not really even paying attention to the words they're saying, or if he's learning and he's sitting here, but his mind, we're not talking about when you're like exhausted, but when you have the ability to really pay attention and to focus and to ask questions and to understand, and you don't bother. That's weakening. That's referring to weakening yourself here. Good question. Okay. Amr of Safra. Rav Safra tells, this is a fascinating story. Rav Yavo Havi Mishtai. Rav Yavo was speaking, and he told the following story as he was speaking. Kishiyered Chanina ben Achi Rav Yeshua. When Chanina, the son of the brother of Rav Yeshua, when he went from Eretz Yisrael to Gola, he had to leave into exile. So maybe he was in Babel, somewhere outside of Israel. This individual, this Chanina, he continued to intercalate the calendar in order to add months during leap years. In other words, we have a set calendar, and therefore we have a very set calendar where in a 19-year cycle we have 7 leap years, and they're very set as to which years of the 19 years they are, and during those years we add an extra month of Adar. That's how we connect our lunar calendar. We make it line up with the solar calendar. But in the times of the Sanhedrin, they would go ahead in Israel, and they didn't have a set calendar. Each year would look at when Pesach was coming. They would look to see when the dates worked out, and they made a decision year to year whether it was necessary, whether this particular year was going to be one they would add the leap year. Of course, it would always work out, but again, it was something similar to maybe what we do now, but it wasn't as rigorous, it wasn't as automatically set. They actually had to sit down and formally decide whether this would be a leap year. Now, this individual was doing it outside of Israel. The problem is that there is a pasuk which teaches us that this can only occur in Israel. Actually, not it can only occur in Israel. It can only occur in the land of Judea, in the portion of Israel of Yehuda, Eretz Yehuda, because it refers to Eretz Yehuda as the place of Jerusha, where you will seek out Hashem. And this Jerusha also means not just to seek Hashem, but also means that you are going to investigate. Bidoresh, you're going to investigate whether something that the rabbis understand this to mean that when you're investigating whether or not you have to do a leap year, that investigation, that decision has to take place in the land of Judea, in Eretz Yehuda. So this individual was doing it outside the land of Israel inappropriately. So what they did was, from Israel, Shagru Acharav, they sent to him Shnei Tamei Chacham, Rav Yossi ben Akafar, they would send Rav Yossi ben Akiper, Ben Kiper, Uben Benosh Zachari ben Kivutel. They sent these two scholars out to him to give him the following message, which we'll see in a second. Now, Kevin Shiraosam, since Chanina sees that these two scholars come to him, Amar Lehem, he said to him, Lama Batem, why did you come to me? Amar Leh, they said to him, Lilmo Torah Banu, we came to learn Torah. So Hichr Zalem, so he announced regarding these two new visitors, new guests in town, and he told everyone in town, Anashim Halalu Gedolei Hadorhim, these are the greatest of our generation, they're great sages. And not only that, not only the great sages, but they have great yichus, they have great lineage, because their ancestors had served in the Beis Mikdash. How do we know that their ancestors served in the Beis Mikdash? We have a following proof, at least to one of them, where it says, goes to Shaninu, we have the following in the Gemara in Yoma. The Gemara in Yoma talks about all the different details of Yom Kippur. And Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol, the night before the service of Yom Kippur, the night of Yom Kippur, he had to stay up all night long. We wanted to make sure that he wouldn't, in his sleep, have by accident a seminal emission, which would cause him to become Tameh. And because he had to be ready to serve the next day without any Tumah. So they kept him up all night long. How would you keep up the Kohen Gadol all night long? By telling him stories, by teaching him Torah. Not just the, stuff that was very intricate laws. They had to keep him stuff that was, like, interesting and with plot twists. So what they, so this, the following teaching is related to us. Zechariah ben Kibutel, which is the grandfather of the scholar in our story, he says, we have a tradition from him, he says that Harbei Pa'amim, Karisi Lefanov, the Sefer Daniel. He says that many times I read Sefer Daniel to the Kohen Gadol, meaning because Sefer Daniel had lots of interesting stories, lots of interesting discussions. It was like a plot twist thing story. So he would read that to the Kohen Gadol. The point of this whole story is to say that this individual, this grandson of Zechariah ben Kibutel, he is the grandson of someone who served in the Beis Hamikdash. So he has his lineage, his great lineage, and he's a great scholar. So the story continues. Hizchil hu metame vehemetarim. Now this Hanania, he would, let's say some people would come to him for a halachic decision. He would say, this thing is impure. It's tame. And they would, meaning these two scholars who were sitting there learning, would say, nope, you're wrong. We disagree. What you said is tame, we say is tahor, we say it's pure. And hu oser, if let's say there was a case of something that was, let's say they came some kind of meat, and they said, well, this, did this become treif? Is it oser? Milk fell in, is it meat milk? And he would say it's oser, they would say it's prohibited. The hematarim, they would say it's permitted. So they would contradict all of his rulings. So hichriz alam, so this Hanani didn't like this whole, that these two guys were like contradicting all of his piskei halacha, all of his halachic rulings. So hichriz alam, he announced regarding these two people, anashim halu shoshavim, they're worthless. She'll tow him. There should be like a desolate. They should be put, like they're of nothing. Amru lo, meaning he wants to say that don't listen to these guys. Amru lo, they said to these two scholars said to Hananya, you know something, kavar banisa. Once you built us up, once you built one up in people's eyes, yes, I hold the story. You can't now knock us down. People are going to still believe that we are trustworthy. Ukavar Gadarta, since you made a nice fence around us by telling us everyone when we first came how great we were, you cannot break breaches in our fence, meaning you will not have access to us to undermine us. Amar Lahem. So he says to them, why is it that you contradict all my rulings? Like, what are you doing this for? I don't understand. So they said to him, the reason why is because you are going ahead and inappropriately intercalating the calendar. You're inappropriately establishing the new the leap years outside of Israel. We're not supposed to. So Amar Lahem, he said back to him, this Hananya said in his own defense, Akiva ben Yosef. Akiva ben Yosef is the famous Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva did so. There was one time, there was a time in a period of time when Rabbi Akiva himself, who normally lived in Israel, but there was a time where he was outside of Israel, and he also established a new leap year, not in Israel. So how could he do that? So Amru lo, they said to him, no, Hanach Rabbi Akiva, that was a unique circumstance. There is an exception to the rule when you can do it when you don't have to do it in Israel. And that is Shaloimiach Kamoso Be'eretz Yisrael. When there was no great scholar like him in Israel to do it, when there was no one available, then he could do it even outside of Israel because the Jewish nation needed the proper decision to be made about whether or not there was going to be a new month, a leap year. And if there was no one in Israel fitting to do so, then Rabbi Akiva had to do it outside of Israel. But that was a unique circumstance. So Hananya says in his own defense, Amalei, Afani lo hinachti kamosi beretz Israel. He says, I also left no one in Israel like me. Meaning, when I left Israel, there was no one like me who could do it. So that's why I continue to do it outside of Israel. I'm in the same situation. So Amrlo, he said to him, you know something, you're right. For a period of time, there was no scholar in Israel, there was no great rabbi in Israel who was able, on your level, to go ahead and to decide the proper time to make a leap year and when was not proper to make a leap year. But they said to him, Gediim hinachta. When you left Israel, there were these small young scholars. They were kid goats. Gediim. But since that time you left, years have passed, and they have gained in stature. They've gained in knowledge. They've gained in becoming great rabbis. Naasu tayashim. They became rams. Bale karnayim, with horns. I mean, they became really serious and substantial talmidei chachamim. So in Israel now, we do have the people who can take care of the issue of the calendar. Vehem shigru atleinu, and they sent us to you. These rabbis sent us to you. Vehein amrulan, they told us to tell you. Lechuv amrulo, tell Rabbi Chanina, b'shemenu, in our name. Im shomea, if you listen to us and you're not going to do the same, or mutaf, meaning you stop doing what you're doing. Vehem lav, and if you don't listen to us and you're going to continue to work on the calendar when you're not supposed to, in the place you're not supposed to, then yeh b'nei do it. You're going to be in excommunication. So, top of the next page, now in Samach Gimel Beis. So, Amru La'achinu Shebegola, so we also, and these two scholars, these two people who were the messengers, also told the people in exile, I mean, in this community, Im Shom, if you listen to us, Mutav, I mean, if you listen to us and you stop trying to figure out the calendar with this Rabbi Chanina, great. Lav, if you're not going to listen to us, Yalu Lahar. It's as if you're going up to the mountain. Meaning going up to the mountain to serve an avodah zara. It's like you're literally leaving Judaism to do things on your own, not in the proper confines of the halacha. It's like you're going off to a new religion. Achya Yivne Mizeach. It's like Achya was the Resh Galusa. He was the exilarch. Exilarch meaning he was the one in charge of he was the leader of the Jewish people outside of Israel when they were in Galus. And they changed the word here. It says Chananya, but they changed it to Chanina, who's the person of our story. This Rabbi Chanina, Yinagin Biknor. It's like he should play the harp. Meaning you're all going to be doing things, building altars to other gods, playing harps to other gods. Meaning, if you're going to continue doing what you're doing, when it's inappropriate outside the confines of halacha, then you might be serving another religion. V'yichru kulam, and you should all go ahead. You're all kofrim. You're all rejecting Hashem, and you should all say, Ein lahem chelek v'lokei Yisrael. Like, we have no portion in the God of Israel. This is the same line, which was, again, this is what the Greeks, it's a lot background to this line, but it means we're rejecting Judaism, we're rejecting Hashem. Miyad ga'u kol ha'am b'v'chi, they immediately start crying, v'amru chas v'shalom, God forbid we should do this. Yeshalom chelek v'lokei Yisrael, we are not going to go ahead, we're not going to continue to do the calendar, and we do want, obviously, to stay within the Jewish community. Now the question is, why did they have to go so far? Why did they have to go ahead and contradict every one of his rulings? Why did these two scholars have to start doing that? The answer is Mishum Shenemar, because it says, Kimitzion Tetzei Torah Devar Hashem Yerushalayim, because we have a tradition that the Torah is established from Yerushalayim, from Israel. And that is where the proper place of intercalating the calendar and establishing leap years. So Bishlomo, who Mitaher Vehem Mitmin, I would understand. If they want to contradict him, and it was a case where Rabbi Chanina was permitting, he said it's tahor, it's pure. And then they would do the opposite, and they would say it's impure. L'chumra, I mean, they were taking a strict rejection of his ruling, where he said it's okay, and they said it's not okay. They were being strict. I would understand. But Elohu mitameh, v'heim mitaharim, hechidami, if he says it's no good, and they should come back and say, yeah, everything's fine, how can that be? Hechihavi, how could that be? Because we have the following rule in terms of when you decide halacha, and it is the following braisa. If one rabbi already paskins that this particular circumstance is no good, it's impure, in chavero, you cannot go back to the next rabbi, can't step up and say, you know, I disagree at this point, I'm going to change the psak and say that it's okay. Asar in chavero shay lahatir, and if he said it's prohibited, the next I can't step up and say it's okay. In this particular case, meaning the next case that comes around, they can have another discussion. But in this case, if already the guy passing, if already he set the ruling, you can't change the circumstance of that particular case. Kesavri, the answer is Kesavri kehidle negru basrei. They went ahead. We're not talking about where they thought, like he passed, everything was fine. I'm sorry, when everything was no good, and they say everything's fine. We're talking about a scenario where there really were. A very difficult case where there were reasons to say it was good and good reasons to say it was no good. I mean, you could understand why you would paskin strictly or leniently in this case. And because it was a case which could go both ways, and because it was a case where they personally felt that the correct halacha was to be lenient, even though he was initially strict, they overruled him only because the circumstance here was to try and accomplish the goal of making sure people were no longer following him. They wanted to get away from, he was the leader of the community, and he was doing things inappropriately by intercalating the calendar, by establishing the months, and they had to get a situation where they had to drive a wedge between his community and this rabbi just to, so they have a chance to change the way in which he's acting. But they only did this for that reason. But normally, under normal circumstances, they would not have done so. Because once a person gets up, Rabbi Goldberg gets up and says, this case is no good, this is prohibited, this particular case we discussed is prohibited, you can't, the next rabbi who's sitting next to him can't say, I hear here's the case, and he says, well, I'm going to permit it. Can't go from rabbi to rabbi and do that. They can have a discussion, and then we can change Rabbi Goldberg's mind, or they can discuss that the next time around we're going to have a different stock. But for that case, they're not going to do that. Again, unless it was unusual extenuating circumstances, which is really what the Gemara is trying to get to. This was an unusual extenuating circumstance. Okay, Tanur Rabbanan. The rabbis did the following teaching. Kishenichlisu Rabbeinu leKeren BeYavne. When the rabbis came to Keren BeYavne, what was in Keren BeYavne? After Yerushalayim was destroyed, it was being destroyed. So Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai came, and he said he came out to the Roman emperor, actually at the time, and he said to Vespasian, he said, "You're the emperor." The whole story is discussed in the Gemara and Gittin, and the upshot of the story is that he said to him, "I'm going to grant you any wish." And he says, "Tenli Yavni Chachamea," in order to continue the learning, he says, "Please let me establish a yeshiva in Yavne, the Kerem of Yavne." Why were they called the vineyards, the Kerem of Yavne? Because vineyards are arranged in rows. And the way in which they learned in the academy was like rows of students in front of the Rebbe. So we're referring to now the time where they now started to gather the rabbis from all around Israel. There used to be the center of learning was Yerushalayim. But because Yerushalayim was destroyed at the time, the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed by the Romans, the new center of learning was established in Yavne. Nowadays there's a yeshiva called Keren BeYavne in that location, in that same geographic area in Israel. So they went to the Keren BeYavne, all these great rabbis who were there. Hayusham, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Nechemya, Rabbi Elazar, Benosha, Rabbi Yossi Haglili, all these different rabbis were all gathering there. And they were being hosted by the community. All these rabbis, all these students came. They were never there before. Now the community is now putting up. They are now hosting all these young scholars. So Pasul Kulam Bechavad Achsanya, they went ahead and they started giving drashos, saying nice things about the community who is now hosting them. So Pasach Rabbi Yehuda, Rosh HaMadabim B'chol Makom. Yehuda had the title of the head speaker in any place. I mean, he was the first to speak. At any event, he was the first to speak. I remember in my own wife's family, my wife's grandfather, Rabbi Pelkowitz, was a big rabbi in Farakway. So whenever we at any kind of family events or any kind of gathering, we always would introduce him as, you know, Pelkowitz is going to speak. He's the Rosh HaMadabim B'chol Makom. He's the one who is honored as the first speaker in every place. So we always honor the greatest of the scholars and to be the first to speak. Okay. So he said the following, Vidarash. Moshe, kachet ha'oil v'natzel lo michutz ha'machna. Moshe took his tent and he set it up outside the camp of Israel. What are we talking about? We're talking about after the chet ha'egel. Bnei Israel sinned and Hashem was very angry with Bnei Israel after the golden calf. So Moshe, seeing that Hashem was angry, said, I'm angry too. I'm going to take my tent, which was in the middle of the camp of Israel, where everyone could easily access it, and I'm going to take it to the edge, to the border at the edge of the camp of Israel, all the way to one side, to make people have to travel farther. And what does it say? It says, V'alu d'varam ka v'chomer. Uma Aron Hashem, just like the Aron, the tabernacle, the Aron where the Luchos were, at that time the broken Luchos were located, Shalohayu Meruchak, Elish Neimaser Mil, it was only 12 mil. A mil is the distance it takes to walk 18 minutes. So it was 12 mil away, 12 of these 18-minute walks away. So Amra Torah Vayakom, which was the extent of the camp of Israel, meaning the size of the encampment of all of Israel, all the 12 tribes in Israel, from one edge to the other edge, was 12 mil. So the farthest someone would ever have to travel, if Moshe brought his tent to the very edge of the camp, if someone's at the very other side of the camp, the most he has to travel to get to Moshe, if he wants to learn Torah, was 12 mil. And nonetheless, the Torah speaks about those individuals who have come to Moshe, and it says, "Vayakol mevakesh Hashem yetzel ol hamoed." Anyone who was a seeker of Hashem, which is a nice appellation, you are a mevakesh. You're one who seeks out Torah. You seeks out Hashem, so he will go to the ol hamoed. So that's all he traveled, just 12 mil from one side of the camp to the other. But here, in the case of Yavne, where the Tamir Chachamim were coming from all around Israel, to reestablish Torah learning. They were coming shahochem year to year. They were coming even from one city to another, medina to medina, and from one province of Israel, like from the Galil, they came to Karen Biavna, which is in Eretz Yehuda. They came from one place to another, lilmo Torah, to learn Torah. How much more so we should apply them an appellation of Mevakshe Hashem, that they are the seekers of Hashem. Again, to give them proper kavod. By Dabar Hashem Moshe, panim upanim. It says that Hashem spoke to Moshe face to face. Now we know that Hashem told Moshe, Lo yirani adam b'chaya. A person cannot see Hashem's face and live. So obviously Moshe did not literally speak face to face directly. We know he spoke very close to Hashem, but it wasn't face to face. That has to mean something other than the literal translation. So Rav Yitzchak said, Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Moshe, ani ve'ata, nasbir panim b'halacha. Let's go ahead and show, you know, favor, niceness to each other when we teach each other halacha, when we teach each other Torah. We mean when we're learning together. That's what it means, panim upanim. Like a friendly way of when you're friendly with someone, you're speaking face to face. When you're not friendly with someone, they're turning their head face away from you. Another way of saying it is that Hashem said the following to Moshe. Just like I have been very nice to you, teaching you Torah, making it accessible to you, having you understand everything of Torah when I teach it to you, you too should teach Torah to Bnei Yisrael in the easiest way, in the nicest way. And therefore, hachzer ohel l'makomo. You took your tent and you put it to the edge of the camp. You took it and made it harder for the Bnei Yisrael to get to you. Put it back right in the middle of the camp of Israel where it was originally, so that Bnei Yisrael should have an easy time of learning Torah with you. And therefore, it says in the pasuk, "V'shav l'machana." Moshe returned to the camp from where he had removed his tent. He went back to the center. Amr b'yavahu, Amr l'kosh baruch hu l'Moshe. Hashem says to Moshe, "Achshav yomru harav v'kas." Bnei Yisrael are going to say, "Look." Harav, who's the Rav, the teacher? Who's the teacher? Meaning the teacher of Torah is Hashem. The Talmud, who's the Talmud? That's Moshe. He's also angry, meaning Hashem was angry at us after the Egel Azav. The students, meaning Moshe, was angry at us because he took his tent and moved it out of the camp. Yisrael Matehelehem, they're saying to themselves, we're in despair. We got nothing. Who's going to help us? Hashem doesn't like us. Moshe doesn't like us. We're done. We're done for. So, Ima tamachzir tol moet l'makoma mutav. If you take your tent and you move it back to where it was, I'll accept that. V'imav, if not, you can't be the leader of Bnei Yisrael anymore. Bnei Yisrael cannot think that everyone's against them, that Hashem's against them, the leader's against them. Rather, I'll have Yoshua ben Nun, Tamidcha, Misharis Tachtecha. I'm going to have Moshe, your student, who is serving unto you, become the leader. Hainu Dechziv. Therefore, it says right away, Vashev El Hamach, Vashav El Machna. Moshe returned to the camp. Amar Rava. So Rava said, Afa Pichein, even so, even though this was the case, even though in the end, Moshe did listen to Hashem, and therefore, it wasn't necessary to replace Moshe Rabbeinu as the leader with Yoshua. Lo yitzeh davar levatala. Well, Hashem said, which was, I'm going to make Yoshua the leader, didn't go for naught. Because after Moshe Rabbeinu died, who became the leader of Bnei Yisrael? It says Yoshua. It says, Mesharto Yoshua ben Nun, na'ar lo yamish mitoch ohel. Yoshua ben Nun, who was a young lad who had always stayed in Moshe's tent learning Torah, he eventually became the next leader of Bnei Yisrael. Okay, let's try and get just a little bit farther. I think we have... maybe one more minute. Let's see if we can get a little bit more. Let's start the next teaching. It says, "V'od pasach of Yeshua bechavat Torah v'darsh." He said, "In the honor of the Torah, he said the following: Hasket, listen closely, v'shma Yisrael, and you will hear, O Israel. Hayom hazeh ni'esalam. Today you became a nation." So the Gemara says, "Wait a second. This is not talking about. This is in Devarim. This is much years later after they got the Torah. V'chi oso hayom. This is at the end of Moshe's life." On that day, did they get the Torah? This is the end of the 4 years of being in the desert. They didn't get Torah yet. The love that those who learn Torah have for the Torah is as if it is so fresh, so exciting to them, as if they received it on this very day. Okay, let's stop over here, and we'll continue from here next week. I believe there's only going to be one more week of Sundays. Let me end the recording here.